Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Washington Weekly Podcast on the UBS In The Now podcast channel. Joining us for the conversation today, glad to welcome back Shane Lieberman, Senior Governmental Affairs Advisor with Governmental Affairs U.S. here at UBS. Shane, very timely that you're joining us on this Thursday morning. Thank you for dropping by, spending some time with our listeners and clients, as there is indeed a lot happening within Washington, D.C. this week.
Yeah, well, it's good to be with you, Dan. A lot going on, so happy to join you for this call today.
Absolutely. And with that, Shane, heading into Wednesday this week, it was coined as Liberation Day. We did hear from President Trump at the White House outline his reciprocal tariffs. There's a lot there to digest. So I'm curious to hear your interpretation of what we heard from the White House on Wednesday, and what are some of the more notable takeaways our listeners and clients should be mindful of?
Right. I think the first thing is to recognize that these tariffs go beyond what was expected. And I think that's kind of the reaction that you're seeing today. You know, for weeks it was viewed that this was going to be, you know, focused on reciprocal tariffs. Focusing on countries that had tariffs on U.S., you know, products. But also, you know, there was a little bit of understanding that this would probably go beyond just traditional tariffs and include things that are considered, you know, non-tariff barriers, you know, things that aren't tariffs that still make it harder for U.S., you know, to operate in a country and sell goods and products. So yesterday's announcement, you know, goes beyond kind of what was expected. It appears that even countries that we have a trade surplus with are captured in this. I'll use Colombia as an example. You know, the country of Colombia in South America, you know, we have a trade surplus of about over $1 billion, and yet they have a 10% tariff being applied to them. So, you know, 10% seems to be kind of the minimum that goes, that's universal, and then kind of a scale of, you know, countries seeing higher tariffs. And that scale seems to be based on, you know, does the U.S. have a trade deficit with such a country? You know, use Israel as an example. The U.S. has a trade deficit with Israel, so Israel is facing a 17% tariff rate. Now, there are some, you know, exceptions here and there. Take, for example, Canada and Mexico. You know, if something is USMCA compliant, you know, those kind of can avoid some of these tariffs. So this, I think we still have a lot to learn, though, about some of these details. There is a little bit of a fluid timeline where some of them are, you know, in place now, and then there are a couple of triggers. There is another tranche that was announced yesterday that goes into place, I think, in 2 days, and then some more later on, like I think in a month, there's a de minimis with China, so something that is smaller and does not have tariffs currently, there will be something later on. So fluid, but I think the bigger fluid, the more fluid part is, you know, the reaction by other countries that we need to pay attention to.
Yeah, Shane, that's a great segue in terms of how this may all evolve from here. As you suggested, remains very fluid as negotiations are ongoing, though in these early hours, have we heard from our trading partners in terms of feedback, reception of these announcements from the White House?
Yeah, no, there's a seems to be kind of a range of that. I think, you know, you've seen countries like Argentina, where their foreign minister is going to meet with the U.S. trade representative to talk about a trade deal. So they're already kind of, I think, leaning into, you know, what can be worked out here. India is looking at an EV tariff cut as part of a deal with the U.S. So there are countries that are, you know, starting to engage. But then you already have some governments that are looking to fight these tariffs. Just before I joined you on this call, I think of French President Macron was going down that route, as well as many other countries in the EU. So I think the EU is looking at this point to kind of band together and push back. But, you know, this is fluid. So I think every country is going to have a different response. I think kind of maybe the smaller, more isolated countries that don't have kind of a group to attach themselves to, like the EU, may be looking for a quicker, simpler resolution. Countries like China and, you know, we'll probably try and push back a little harder.
Well, Shane, trade policy indeed will remain top of mind, and we will continue to keep our listeners up to speed on the latest developments out of Washington as we learn more. Before we close out, one other topic I want to spend some time on. We did see earlier this week we had a few notable special elections across the states of Florida and Wisconsin. What was the significance of these elections, and what do the outcomes suggest about voter sentiment?
Yeah, well, first you had two Republican wins in Florida and Democrat win in Wisconsin. Now, the wins in Florida are for two House seats, so Republicans in Congress are excited that they'll have, instead of a very narrow majority, only a slightly narrow majority with these two members. The reality is those two votes will be very needed for Republicans in Congress to move forward. There is some paperwork involved, so we're still waiting to see when those two members will be sworn into to Congress. But to your larger point of, you know, what is this signal is, you know, it's kind of a Rorschach test where people see what they want to see. But I think the reality is that while Republicans won both seats in the House in Florida, you know, they were expected to, and they should have won. You know, these are seats that are solidly Republican. And, you know, one of the seats was supposed to be pretty close, but at the end of the day, the Republican won comfortably. But it's really noteworthy to Democrats that this person did not win as comfortably as the Republican predecessor. And so they saw the margin of victory shrink greatly. And, you know, Democrats see that as a sign of optimism on their side and, you know, enthusiasm, and they'll try and build on that enthusiasm and say to Democrats across the country, look, you know, there is enthusiasm on our side. Let's keep in the fight and we can win in the midterm elections in 2026. I think Republicans, you know, rightfully point out that, you know, these special elections often are unique and kind of have unique circumstances. The turnout is always very different than a regular election in November of an election year. So, you know, they're not trying to scare themselves yet and panic. But I think there are signs that, you know, the enthusiasm is on Democrats' side. Republicans will also point out that, you know, Democrats spend tens of millions on these races. And, you know, in one of these House races, not that much money was spent on the Republican side, really. You know, it came down to President Trump posting on social media. So Republicans say, look, you spent tens of millions of dollars and on our side to win, the president just had to post on social media. And so that shows, one, his power and influence, but also, you know, money is not as defining as it used to be in some of these elections. But, you know, move to the Wisconsin race and factor that in, I think Democrats are very excited about 2026. You know, that Wisconsin race was statewide. Wisconsin is now one of those purple states, right? You know, we've seen it is one of the few states with a Republican representing them from the Senate, and also a Democrat representing from the Senate. You know, we've seen Wisconsin go in recent history both for Republican for president and Democrat for president. And this was expected to be a very close race, but the Democrat won by 10 percentage points, you know, 55% to 45%, which was pretty, you know, a clear victory for Democrats. So I think, you know, at the end of the day, Democrats are enthused. They're not trying to get ahead of themselves. They need to figure out how they kind of take that enthusiasm and make it last. You know, that is something that it's often tough for both parties to do, which is, you know, bottle up the energy and keep that momentum going for, you know, almost 20 months to the election. So, I think, you know, that it's possible, and we've seen it happen before where they can keep that enthusiasm going. But I also think it's too early to kind of say, you know, Republicans are toast in the midterm elections. Because I think, you know, going back to tariffs for a moment, you know, President Trump and Republicans, their kind of gamble in a sense is short-term pain for long-term gain. They are, you know, hoping that the short-term pain that these tariffs are inflicting lead to greater prosperity on the long term. And so, you know, those special elections kind of may be a snapshot in time, and that time may not be here, you know, in November 2026. So very interesting results and worth noting, but you can't, you know, predict the future based on it.
Well, Shane, that was a great analysis, very interesting takeaways from this week's election outcomes. And before we know it, we will be discussing the midterms on a more regular basis, though. Shane, I know it's a very busy day for you. Thank you again for carving out some time to be with our listeners and clients to keep them informed on these very important topics.
Well, thanks, Dan. It's good to be with you. Look forward to talking to you more. I know we're going to be talking about tariffs and other issues in the coming weeks. Taxes, lot going on here in D.C., and I think we're going to have a busy year ahead.
Definitely. Looking forward to keeping our listeners and clients informed along the way. Again, today we've been joined by Shane Lieberman, Senior Governmental Affairs Advisor with Governmental Affairs U.S. here at UBS. Before we close out, as always, I do want to point you, our listeners, to the Washington Weekly publication, which can be located up on ubs.com/Washington Weekly. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreement and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.